This is Money Matters with Dave Petzel on Idaho's talk station, 580 KITO.
580 KITO, Kevin Miller in the morning. We continue on. So Toyota, Dave Petzel, is investing $1.3, $1.4 billion into a Kentucky plant. Do you think they would have done that if Hillary Clinton had won the election?
Actually, no, I don't. I think there's a lot of jobs coming here, and also especially jobs that are trying to position themselves, or will, if you will, companies that are positioning themselves, like in automotive, where the Japanese do have an unfair advantage. There's no question that they have tariffs on U.S. cars coming in. We have minimal tariffs on their cars coming in. Now, so I think they're also positioning to say we are willing to invest here and invest more and create jobs in America, but please don't be too punitive to us as you try to redo these trade rules. And I think you're going to see more of that. We have certainly seen it with Carrier and others. And here and there, they do add up to real jobs. So, Kevin, I think it's a very positive thing to be a to have a pro-growth, have strength in the White House.
Indeed. Now, you're not a fan, though, of putting tariffs on stuff coming into our country, even if it would, you know, be the stick, if you will, to make sure that the tariffs that are applied to U.S. manufacturing. Most of us never really understood why, if you go to China, you go to Japan, you want to buy an American car, there's a tariff on it. But if you want to buy a Japanese car over here, except for what Ronald Reagan did back in the day, they're essentially tariff-free.
That's true, essentially. But there are some. And no, Kevin, I'm not unilateral in this. I think it would be wonderful to think in terms of a purely free trading world where we didn't worry about the fact of if another country puts tariffs on us, so be it. Because those countries that trade the freest, the most active, have always been the most prosperous. And the reason why is because those countries, by definition, then, are going to be laser beam focused on what is the most productive thing they could be doing as a nation and as a business. And so as people are focusing on that, they're being more and more productive and focused in one particular area. That creates great economic output. But you also get, when other countries are dumping, if you will, dumping toys or steel or whatever it is in our country, you're right. That's not fair to the jobs in America, and that's where we have to decide whether that is fair trade or not. And that's where we get in the tricky part of saying, yeah, that really is great because we have cheaper steel than we would otherwise. So construction is less expensive. Therefore, again, and the toys or whatever it is they're dumping, clothes, everything else. What we don't really sometimes recognize is that when we go to the store and we're paying ridiculously low prices for amazing technology, clothes that last longer than ever before, and so on and so forth, it is we have to recognize that's because of free trade, and that's because these countries can and do make it a lot less expensively. That all taken together, Kevin, I think I'm a believer in fair trade, but free we must be.
So we've covered the Fed. What else should we be looking out for?
Kevin, I think I want to make this point about the market and corporate profits coming up. We're about to be starting into earnings season here, and corporate profits are expected to rise at the fastest level since 2011. And oftentimes we are asking this puzzling question, right? Why is the stock market at all-time highs, which is something people have been talking about for 10,000 points on the Dow? And they always have, but it's been very loud the last few years because we are laser-focused on all of the noise, and whether it's running from Brexit to, oh, my gosh, if Trump got elected, the market's going to tank. Before that, it was Europe Part 1, 2, 3, and 4. All of those things that are just so hyped up, we miss this general point. Corporate profits are at record levels. Corporate balance sheets are the strongest they've ever been. The amount of corporate cash on those balance sheets, the most it's ever been, available for mergers, acquisitions, expansion, even just paying dividends and stock buybacks. All of those things added together, you go, of course the market's at all-time highs. Everything looks very good on the corporate balance sheet. And so as we've talked about, Wall Street and Main Street are two different characters. And Wall Street's been doing very, very well in spite of all of this news. be aware that corporate profits are soaring again at the fastest pace since 2011. We'll see how this season turns out, but that's what that is what analysts are expecting, and I think that's going to be the driver the next few weeks as we have all of the corporate profits coming out from the first quarter, which appear to be very, very good.
You know, I notice when you say that, you get excited. It's kind of like an episode of Money Matters, the way you say that.
Well, I think we should be. I think it's okay, but thank you for that. Okay, it is, and it is exciting that corporations are buying back stock, paying out dividends at record levels, and making record profits in spite of. This is what's so exciting, in spite of an anti-business environment. That just says how creative and innovative business is. And imagine now, when we just at least know what the rules are. We may not be able to roll back every stupid rule.
Right.
We may not be able to fix Obamacare right
off. Some rules aren't stupid, though.
Well, some rules aren't.
Like the 40-hour work week, like benefits, and, you know, you unfettered capitalists, I mean,
yeah,
child labor laws, those sorts of
things. Oh, we need kids in there, you know, bleeding hands and all that. Come on.
Which, of course, just kidding.
Of course I am. Hey, I come from the coal mines just like you.
Right, exactly.
That's my background. All union people, I totally get it. And, you know, watching those people die and not be cared for, those laws were very, very good. Anyway.
Back to you.
Back to my thought here. We are at the dawn of just explosive potential growth because of all these barriers being taken out of the way. Imagine what's going to happen when we reduce tax rates. We have already started reducing hundreds of regulations that are nothing more than a burden, opening up the pipelines. I mean, these things are just no wonder business confidence is exploding. It is absolutely super exciting. It doesn't mean it happens tomorrow, but the idea that we are moving towards corporate tax reform and personal tax reform, that they are going to continue to look at every regulation and get rid of some bureaucrats. Kevin, this is just, it's like a dawn of a new era. It's amazing because it's not just the last 8 years. We have been regulating since Reagan, re-regulating all of business since Reagan.
Dave Petzo with us. Locally, anything to look out for?
No, you know, Micron, as you know, has been absolutely on fire. And the stock is doing well, but also let's not just look at the stock. They are just absolutely creating. It's like they've got a printing press for their dollar bills in the back because it is. There's so much money. They're looking at over $1 billion worth of profit this quarter. Profit, not cash flow. Profit. So billions of free cash flow. The company is able to do whatever it wants to do going forward without dilution. They may even be able to buy back some of their debt. This is a very exciting time for Micron. And the other thing that we miss too, Kevin, is not that, you know, watching locally is anything particular. Say, well, this little business over here is doing great. They're all doing great. And they employ one, two, three more people over the next year is why this valley is doing so well.
Dave Petzo, are you always doing well?
Most all the time I am doing well. Thank you, Kevin, for asking.
Just interested.
Yeah.
Dave Petzo, the Petzo Center, Petzo Financial. You can catch him Saturdays, 8 to 10 on Money Matters at 580 KIDO. Dave, thank you.
Thank you, Kevin.
You're listening to 580 KIDO.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on Idaho's talk station, 580 KIDO.
Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us. And yes, we are live. We would like to visit with you at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. If you prefer email, that's fine. It's dave@petzofinancial.net. You know, volatility is back, or, you know, is it? I mean, there's no question the market was much more volatile, has been, really the last couple of weeks. We've got the VIX picking up. That's a measure of volatility in the market. People are more concerned. In other words, they're buying more protection, buying more options on the market. It doesn't mean the market's going down. That doesn't mean that at all. It doesn't mean they're right. It just means that investors are definitely more concerned. And who can blame them? Who who can blame us? We've got all these geopolitical events. We've got Russia upset. We're dropping bombs in Syria. We've got a carrier group heading towards North Korea. It's an interesting time. But I want to pose this question, instead of thinking of it as on a short-term basis, like what should we do right now, what should we do today, is Donald Trump's presidency in trouble, his agenda meaning, what's going on, Democrats are rallying, well, okay, so all of these things are true, to a degree. But what president comes in with an agenda as big as Trump's, and it goes through flawlessly? No opposition, no problems within or outside of the party. No one. But we live in a time of microscopic perspective and instant perspective. I want to know on, you know, Facebook or Instagram, whatever it is, whatever, Twitter, instantly. I have the knowledge, I think, of what's going on in the world. And then what is news today is just gone tomorrow. And when we think about this from a long-term perspective, is it good in the world, for example, to be more fussed about the idea of geopolitical events now, right now, instead of the idea that nut jobs in Iran, nut jobs in Syria, psychopaths in North Korea, we should just pat them on the head and not do anything about it because, gosh, we don't want to upset the current status. When the long-term status obviously is very dysfunctional, when people like this are free to roam the world, doing harm, potentially causing massive destruction. And when we think about this, we worry so much about our current status quo, right now, this second. And somewhere along the lines, I believe we've lost this generational perspective. Of course we love our grandkids. When we were growing up, and our parents were growing up, basically all our parents did was to be thinking about how to have the lives of their children be better. They weren't worrying so much about what happened in this millisecond of their life. All humans do. But this short-term perspective, it just blows everything out of the water. It blows up people's investment plans. We don't think long-term. We're not capable of doing it somehow. I mean, we are. There are people that do that. I mean, there are people like Warren Buffett. There are people like John Templeton that think generationally. They think over long periods of time, decades, not seconds. But it's the news flow. It's a constant battle of everything coming at us so fast, and that we think we have to react and to understand what's happening right this second instead of taking some kind of a global perspective. You know, if we really thought about it, of course it's a great thing. It was a devastating thing to throw out an Adolf Hitler. The Japanese. But it was, you know, if we thought about it and we thought about it in our day-to-day Twitter activity, were we thinking generationally now compared to then? Or are we? Are we? And you say, well, you know, that's a big philosophical question. I get that. And that's not the point of this. The point of this is, what are we doing with our investments when we fuss and fume on a short-term basis and destroy long-term plans. And it's the same thing. Well, what should we be doing this week? What do you mean we should be doing this week? How about what you should be doing with your investment plan so it's geared up for the rest of your life? Not this week. And when we stop and we think about all this turmoil, all that's going on, how far the market has run, I'm astounded it's not down more. Really. It just has an amazing amount of strength. But all these movements are overreported, fussed about, and then we just move on to the next fussy thing. And we call that, you know, giving out information. It's important stuff. So, no, I don't think that Trump's agenda is derailed. I don't. I think it's an amazingly large agenda that's going to take a long time to fully implement. But I think that our whole frantic thought about everything is our desire, compulsion, actually, compulsion, to know or think we know everything, to want to get constant streams of data into our heads without ever stopping to contemplate, to really quietly think. Because the truth is when you sit down and look at a newspaper, and I mean just look at it, just really look at it, look at the articles. I can't think of anything I read in the newspaper that I didn't already know. I renew it. This stuff happened yesterday. Now, what I enjoy, of course, is an in-depth article, you know, in the journal or something like that. Some thought, Peggy Noonan, you know, editorial, something like that that makes me think. But it isn't a flow of data, which is what we get 24/7. You know, I heard this analogy, and I think it's really valid. You know, how many people last year died of a shark attack? And yet when we go to the beach, the ocean, that's what we're afraid of. I mean, I grant you, that would not be a fun way to go. I'm absolutely serious. That's not how I want to go. But really, four people, that's how many. Four people died last year of a shark attack. And we spent our time fussed on that. Now, let's just say that somebody dies next week, you know, North Carolina, whatever. Florida, of a shark attack. We will see that constantly, 24/7, all day long. Then it'll go away, but then we will see another disaster the next day of some kind, giving us this impression that shark attacks are frequent. He said, well, I know they're not frequent. I know that we know that, but we don't have that impression. I remember, I'll never forget, I'm sure most of us won't forget, the amazing picture that when the Iraqis were free and voted for the first time, the purple thumbs, remember that? So they dyed their thumbs. That's how they knew they had voted. And they were getting ready. It's Baghdad, big, big city, and they know it's going to be violent. It is, and so it's going to be, has to be. And then you see it. Sure enough, there's a bomb, and there's blood on a wall. That's what the camera view shows, and that's the reel that's playing, the violence in Baghdad. Now, if you were to pull away just literally and get a street shot instead of the crater and the blood on the wall, you would see people around the crater who were lined up to vote. If you actually pulled up 100 yards in the air, you would see a beautiful day, sunshine, and a little tiny puff of smoke here or there. What you would really see is a city at peace. All we were shown was a crater and blood. See, the perspective, if we don't take a 10,000-foot level look at things, is that things are really bad and getting worse all the time in every way. And it's frantic, and we need to know what to do. I, for one, am really pleased and thrilled that we are actually not in retreat in the world now, that evildoers are going to be dealt with. I don't want us to fight battles all over the world, but I, for one, think that this is a positive thing for the world. What's been transpiring for the last 8 years is complete chaos. But this transition and change is going to cause dislocation, because this is what we got used to in the world, America in retreat. That's what we got used to. The world was used to pushing around. The thugs just did what they wanted to do. So it's changed, but that doesn't come without a cost. And I think we need to stop and recognize that either the agenda is wrong and we don't want lower regulation and lower taxes, or it will take time and there will be mistakes. And there will be some turmoil. But if we don't have a long-term perspective, I don't think we can see really anything clearly. And this world, we just really run from one tweet to the next, thinking we have perspective of what's going on in the world. And it causes us to have such short-sighted, look at our own finances, our own investments, and really can cause us to make big mistakes. And certainly, at the very least, maybe not a big mistake, but at the very least, causes us concern that's unnecessary. Markets do this. It's what they do. Our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net, and we'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. Dave Petso on Idaho's talk station, 580-KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. Our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO on this wonderful Easter weekend. Finally looking like some spring weather, huh, coming on? Well, gee whiz, strange, a little blizzard yesterday. I guess it's spring in Idaho. That's the way it goes, right? All right, we've been talking about how crazy the, over-obsessed we are with the market and how it really derails our investment plans. And it sure does. It sure does. We can't help but think about, because we have that constant news flow. So here's what, so how do you fight that? Well, that seems very easy to me, really. Now, I understand I might be wired different than somebody else, where I just don't really care who's sleeping with who in Hollywood and all the little data points. And you might say, well, I don't. I just look at the bigger things. Well, are we? Are we really doing that when we're just constantly immerse ourselves in constant, I don't even want to call it discussions, because it's not. It's not. We think we're getting constant, great information, Because we listen to the news all the time? Really? Because we know it's a higher level discussion than what Brad Pitt is doing or who he's married to or what he's going to name his kid or whatever it is. Sure, that's higher level discussion, and it's still noise. The actual contemplation of all this, and when we think about that, is it what that does and how it affects our ability to think about our long-term investing. All right, so just a couple quick things to think about. When we talk about this and we think about what is the market going to do, I don't know, and nobody does. Forever, we've been talking about how as soon as the Federal Reserve leaves the market, the rates are going to spike, and they didn't. And how Greece, which of course has a GDP of Vermont, for crying out loud, was certainly going to take down the world. We just hear this all the time. Hyperinflation right around the bend. It just never stops. And the same people to tell you all of this stuff for thousands of points, for whatever reason, people continue to go, I wonder what Stockman thinks. I wonder what Peter Schiff, who hasn't been right in, I don't know, a zillion years, has kept people out of the market since it was at Dow 6,000, for crying out loud. And the gold was going to go to $3,000, $4,000 an ounce. He wasn't wrong, of course. He's just a little bit early. But this is what plays for I'm reading, I'm growing, I'm thinking, I'm involved. I read stuff all the time. I know what's going on in the markets. We don't. We can't know the future. But when you have a constant drumbeat of negativity, is this helpful? How is it helpful? And of course it's not. It's not helpful at all. When you think about things on a long-term basis, you think about it, you recognize that, 100 years ago. Well, think about it. 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. It basically is this. If we are growing, and we are, be it slower than we should, as a world, corporations will sell more stuff to more people and make more money. I mean, this is not rocket science. But we turn it into this, I wonder what the market's going to do on a day-to-day basis. Month to month. And we simply miss some of these common sense things. How much we've grown just in my lifetime. It's astounding. It's truly astounding. How much we've grown in 20 years, 30, 50. It's astounding, the wealth creation. That's the big picture to me. And we can get hung up on the little stuff, and we do. All right, we got to take a break here for news. When we come back, our education segment, we're going to talk a little bit about passive and active investing. A little different twist. We'll talk to you after the news.
Thanks so much for joining us. Our email address, if you prefer, is dave@petsofinancial.net. And, of course, we're at 580-KIDO. If you're trying to ring in now, it might be busy, but give it a chance here in a minute, okay? And right now, a very patient Liberty Linda is up to bat. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, good morning, Dave.
Good morning.
And, you know, thank you for sitting in for Kevin. You're a good friend to him.
Oh, he's a good friend.
You.
He's a good friend to everybody, but thank you.
I know. Anyway, we appreciate you. Well, I'm calling in to talk more so about an individual than our government. And I think as individuals, we live on curves. When we're at the top of a curve and we're doing well, then we feel it an honor and a privilege to give and help others. But sometimes we might be on the bottom of the curve where we may need help. And I think when we're going through that period that we look forward to the time that we'll be on top of the curve and be able to help others. And so anyway, I think that most people would live like that. Sometimes we're up and we're doing well, and sometimes we're down and we're not doing that well.
Mm-hmm.
That, of course, I think in our minds it's always good to think that we would be in a place where we can give to others.
I think that's wonderful. And, Linda, I believe that's true of a lot of people. I believe that's true of you. But I also think that we have created within our society a bit of a dependent culture, that not a bit, a lot of it, where people don't feel compelled to ever move or change. And this a society that has no reason for you to work, because they will take money from you, take the freebies away, take away your, you know, here's your earned income credit. You know, in other words, your cash. They take your cash, your free food, your free health care. They take that all away, and that is a society that I don't think functions well for the human being. If you are on a curve of you've been a contributing member to society and now you're not, I think you are okay and we'll come back to it. But what if we grew up that way and that was our life?
Well, we do see a lot going on, you know, in our beautiful United States today that we don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with that. And I really don't know, you know, you're more of a place to be kind of have a pull on the government, what's going on. I guess only through voting we have a pull on that at this time.
We
and
do.
Our new good president, you know, he will hear us.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think things are changing in the swamp.
Right.
I really do. I know that they're fighting it, but I think they're going to. And, Linda, thank you so much for your call today. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Dave. Have a great day.
Hey, you do the same. Thank you. You make it a great day yourself. And our number is 580-KIDO. I'll tell you what we're going to do, because Aaron's been there forever. Aaron, I'm sorry, but you've only got a couple minutes, okay?
Hey, no problem. So just kind of poning off of what Ron Paul Jim was talking about,
mm-hmm.
Don't you think what the Federal Reserve does is redistribution by its very nature?
Well, no, I don't actually. No, we have to have a currency.
That's absurd. That's absurd.
Why? Why is that absurd that what they do isn't redistribution?
Debasing the currency is redistributing, because the people who are first in line with that freshly printed cash have the benefit.
But that's all people. That's not redistributing. Hang on, hang on, Aaron. Calm.
You need to be consistent. You're not being consistent.
Take a deep breath.
It benefits your industry. It benefits your industry.
Okay. It doesn't benefit any other. It's because it's self-serving for me to say that it's not redistribution.
Of course it is.
Okay. Now, if you'd like me to answer, I'll be happy to. What I'm saying is it's not redistribution, because everybody has that same dollar. If you're saying it's not right and you want us to go back to a gold standard or what have you, that's a separate argument. But redistribution of wealth is not me, because I get to take the first dollar. It's everybody. Redistributing is taking it from one person and giving it to another, is it not?
Yes, and that is what it's done. The people who are first in line with that freshly printed cash have the benefit.
Meaning all of us who had a dollar 10 years ago had more value then with that dollar than we do today.
The financial industry is first in line.
How so? I don't understand what you mean by they're first in line. Like they have a different dollar bill than you do?
Hello and welcome to hour number two of Money Matters. I'm Dave Pezzo, and these are, of course, my opinions and my opinions only. And we're not here to tell you what to buy, or sell. It's
that's just noise and silly and completely contrary to what we were just talking about, right? Of this idea that we should be plugged in to all the noise that's going on around us. And, of course, we shouldn't. It just completely destroys any real thought, any depth of any perception of what's really going on out there. So, of course, we're not here to talk about what is all the noise today, but hopefully to think about things in a different way. And I guess the way I think about that is let's turn the coin over and look at the other side. We're pretty sure we see what we see, but how about we turn it over once in a while and just wonder if we look at it the other way? You know, the way I think about that is this. If everybody's on the right side of the boat, it doesn't mean they're wrong, okay? It doesn't mean I necessarily want to run to the left side of the boat, but I definitely don't want to run to the right side. And what I mean by that is we're thinking about things and everybody's sure of certain things. Then it gets all priced in. It's already there. If everybody's already positioned a certain way, think Brexit or any other event. Everybody was sure that it would go a certain way, and when it didn't, it was messy for a whopping 2 days. I get it. And of course, the pundits, whoops, they're wrong again. Isn't it weird how wrong the pundits are? But we want to listen to them over and over and over again, telling us how it's all going to end. And you need to buy gold because it's the only store of value, blah, blah, blah. All of this noise that we hear all the time does not help us get a perspective. And one of the noisy things right now is you need to become a passive investor. You don't want to pay the high fees of a actively managed fund. And, boy, there is an awful lot of intellectual firepower behind that theory that individuals cannot, that brilliant managers cannot outperform the market. And it's just one of those things in my mind that never made any sense to me. I mean, because I grew up in, reading everything about Peter Lynch, Michael Price, John Templeton in particular, Warren Buffett. And these guys didn't beat the market by a little bit. They destroyed the market for decades. It wasn't like a lucky couple of years streak. They destroyed the market. Wasn't even close. It always made sense to me. Why would you buy every stock if the outlook for company A is so much better? If Apple's destroying a BlackBerry, why do I have to own BlackBerry? Why don't I just buy Apple? And sometimes you're wrong, and I get that. You maybe thought that BlackBerry was going to destroy Apple. I don't know. But when we think about these things, it just never made any sense to me. Or when something like in the S&P 500, if something gets so expensive in there, right? It's like it's 1999 again, right? And the tech stocks are really rolling, and we've got all these valuations that are off the charts. But what that means is that as a company gets more expensive, you have to buy more because they're a bigger weight in the index now. So you buy more and more and more as the company becomes more and more and more expensive. Now, for a while, that may be self-fulfilling because more money's chasing after it in an index. But does that make sense? Okay, so we have a really expensive stock that is really overpriced, and we got to buy more of it. I thought we were supposed to buy low and sell high. I did not know you were supposed to chase it as it got more expensive. So it doesn't make sense in that sense. But I'm not here to bash indexing. But to think about this, as we have been, is there a place for it? Of course. Is there a place for active management? Of course. And I don't know that there's a scientific way to measure this. I just have to stop and go, okay, if I'm looking at, and the data is really clear, over super long periods of time, really good managers do beat the index over the vast majority of the time. Okay, I'm talking about you find as many data points as you can, not just a few. So if you take a large organization. I'm not going to name the organization because that's not the point. But you take a large organization with hundreds of managers over the decades, hundreds. Not like, well, I'm never going to find, you know, Peter Lynch. Okay, you know, I can really believe that. That's a very valid point. That there just aren't very many Peter Lynches out there. But if you have an entire organization, you take every single one of their funds, every one of them, and you go month to month, measuring 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, 10 year, 20 year, 30 year performance relative to the benchmark, the S&P 500, or a global benchmark if it's a global fund, then you do really have, and I'm not joking, this is not a made-up number, you have hundreds of managers, not one. You have thousands of data points. It's a pretty compelling argument to say either they have something super special, and they do, or maybe, just maybe, if you follow some criteria, there is a possibility of outperformance. And what are those criteria? Lower cost. Not lowest. Lowest is the index. Lower cost. Consistency. The manager gets this. I mean, this is some data that's been coming up, right? That the companies that have a high active share, that means they don't mirror the index. They do not mirror the index. They don't look like it. They actually go out and they take a stance. They believe that maybe when Cisco was trading at $80 a share in 1999, it was too high. And they didn't own it, even though it was a huge part of the index at that time. That's what active share is. It means it's really actually managed, right? Not to mirror the index or the market. Okay, so high active share, lower than average cost, not lowest, lower than average cost, and do the managers eat their own cooking? Do they own their funds? And you find with that there is a huge percentage of those funds that outperform the market, a high percentage of the time. So is there a place for indexing? Of course. And what we also have to understand that you can have that and then be a core, a low-cost core representing the market. More active management as well, positioned around it. But making sure that the active management is active. Are they taking an active share, meaning are they buying stocks that are different than the index? Because if you're just buying the index, basically, and you have what's called a low active share, you just are owning the index, then why would you pay higher management fees? And undoubtedly, you can't perform as well as the index, can you, with a higher fee and basically owning the index? But when we look at these over rolling periods of time, 3 year, 5 year, 10 year, there are clearly management groups out there that do much better than the market. But here's the rub, and why it's so critically important, especially as people enter retirement. You can't own an index in retirement. It's far too dangerous. It's so super volatile. When you are pulling money from your investments, owning an index is, well, that's just dangerous. That's running with scissors, man. That's walking underneath ladders. That's crazy stuff. When people pull money out and prices are down, it's a death spiral. And you say, well, what's different from that than say, active management? Two things. One, you can't be positioned just in the market or just in bonds and think you're actually diversified. You're not even close. It's not even close, especially in a world of zero interest rates. You're going to put a bunch of money in 2% 10-year treasuries? Are you kidding me? And draw out, what, 4%? I'm not sure what mathematical calculation makes that work, but it doesn't, okay? Just trust me. This does not work. So your classic asset allocation model is completely broken. We've discussed it before. We don't need to beat it to death. But if you're sitting there thinking that a bond index and a stock index is diversified, it's crazy. It's not. And when stocks get hit and you are taking withdrawals, that's a problem. Now, active management can easily be pointed towards higher dividend-paying stocks, which are less volatile, if you're talking about an equity income fund. Potentially layered in there with some preferred stocks or some REITs, things like that, to produce a tremendous amount of income. Meaning, you don't have to sell that often. And when you look at funds, and this is where the math, if you will, for us, gets so difficult for us to understand. But averages don't matter when you start taking money out. They don't matter. So when you take an equity index, or equity income fund, which is a dividend-paying, high dividend-paying stocks, trying to grow their income over time, okay, a little less volatility than the market, and you take a withdrawal from it, and you take a withdrawal from the S&P 500, you run out of money a lot with the S&P 500. It's too volatile. Even though, and here's the tricky part, even though it has an average return that's higher than equity income. See, we think average return or total return is important. It's not when you pull money out. And this, again, is why it's so very difficult to wrap our minds around how do we produce a consistent cost of living adjusted income all the days of our life and never run out. Incredibly difficult. And also, again, why the sharks are out there scaring the socks off people with some, you know, income guarantees and things like that and telling you you can have your cake and eat it too. We all know you can't, but we want to believe it because the answer is difficult. The answer requires common sense, thought, not just in certain allocations. So as we look at these different indices and we look at different ways of producing income in a zero, especially in a zero interest rate world, we have to recognize that passive doesn't work, particularly when you pull income out, because it doesn't produce enough income. It does not produce enough income to sustain during downturns. And selling during downturns is a death spiral. Now, that's not trying to be dramatic or overly dramatic. It's just a fact. So you can really have something that ends up having money that has a lower rate of return on average, or you can have a higher average rate of return and run out of money. And that obviously is not a good solution. You can't tell somebody who's 83 years old, who's run out of money, that, hey, I've got great news. Your average rate of return was really good. I think that person would get punched, don't you? I'm out of money. That's the only point, not your average rate of return. Absolutely nothing wrong with passive. But we're in a world now that makes this stance. But the only thing that matters is cost. And the stance I would say is the only thing that matters is you don't run out of money. Period. Or lifestyle. You say, well, what, an annuity might do that. No, it won't do that because it fixes an income for the rest of your life. And you need more money to live the same lifestyle every year. It's called inflation. It's been there our whole life. Sometimes a little, sometimes a lot, but always there. So you can't fix an amount of money because, no, I honestly, I don't mean this to be funny, but nobody's ever walked into my office and said, you know, I'm ready to retire, and my objective is to have a lower standard of living every day I'm alive. I want my capital to basically erode to inflation. I want to live less and less so that when I'm really old, I really don't have any money. Nobody says that. But if you have a fixed pension, fixed annuity, fixed income, no growth, that's exactly what you're doing, is guaranteeing a lower standard of living the longer you live. Nobody does that. So be careful as we look at this. We'll talk some more because this is a fascinating overall thought process. To me it is, anyway. Hope you find it interesting. That you can have a lower average rate of return and have a great outcome, or you can have a higher average rate of return and have a really bad outcome. You have to manage a portfolio to the objective. I want cost of living, adjusted income all the days of my life, no matter how long I live. That's pretty typical for a retiree, right? Match your objective to that. And I promise you, and we'll talk more about this, indexing that won't work. But more and more data is coming out now, and I think more balanced data that says, yeah, costs matter. It does matter. We know that. But, and a big but, it isn't the only thing at all. And active management, and I mean active share management, not managing to the index, with lower cost and managers that eat their own cooking, is beating the index. Our number is 580-5436. 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net if you prefer email. But man, alive, we have a dead bones today. Let's get it. Let's pick up the activity here and give us a call. People have got to have some questions. Let's give us a call. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. Matters with Dave Petso on Idaho's talk station, 580 KITO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you again for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. That is our number. If you do prefer email, it's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. Let's ring them up, okay? Let's give us a call. We've got plenty of time left to take your calls in today's program. And speaking of emails, Lee writes, Dave, as usual, I'm enjoying your program this morning. Thank you. Please take time to discuss the Wells Fargo situation. Wells Fargo has been in and out of the news for months now since the sales scandal. These scandals can oftentimes mean a corporate shakeup with positive benefits to the shareholders. Sometimes not. How do you think shareholders should be thinking about Wells Fargo right now? Thanks in advance for your thoughts. Thank you again, Lee. I appreciate that very much. It's a fascinating point you bring up right out of the chute, and that is these shakeups are oftentimes very good news. And we can certainly discuss that as far as United Airlines at this point in time, or any airline for that matter. Just because it was United doesn't mean this doesn't happen from time to time. And should that change? Will it change? Will it change? And now mean we are going to regulate how airlines operate and therefore lower profits? It's a very big question upcoming, I think. But to be specific with Wells Fargo here and whether they are, this is going to be a positive for them, I don't think so. I think it's definitely a negative because we're looking at a circumstance here where they really were, by cross-selling, being more profitable. And by rewarding people for cross-selling, they got carried away. There's just no question they got carried away. And of course, that has changed the dynamic. I don't think it's positive at all, and it is not positive for any bank. You might think, well, great, that doesn't affect U.S. Bank or any other bank. It affects them all, because now instead of cross-selling into different, you know, credit cards or whatever it is and rewarding people for that, you're not going to get that. And that is a big change for profitability in these companies. For Wells Fargo, as far as the shakeup goes, I don't see it as being a positive, but I don't see it either as for a company as being a huge, huge negative. Listen, change is hard, and people changing their bank accounts and things like that. How many times have you thought, for example, you know, the person says, I hate U.S. Bank or whatever the company is. You know, I hate them, I don't like what's happening. And then years later, they're still there, right? Because we don't want to go out and go get a new checkbook and all those other things. It is hard to make change. So I don't think they're losing a lot of customers because of this. I think it's going to become not much of an event at all, although I don't really see it as being a positive in this particular case, because I don't think that this is good at all for banks because of the cross-selling the slowdown in the cross-selling that's going to be going on within these banks, as they have to be cautious for all the fines and getting too aggressive the way Wells Fargo did. So shaking it up is better for the consumer. They just don't get, if you will, unethical stuff happening with their accounts. But I really don't think it's going to be any big difference to Wells Fargo. And as far as new management coming in, don't see that as a real positive. This company has been very good. So I don't think it should be sold or bought based on this. I think that in this particular case, it's just going to be more of a neutral. Is the company still operating well? And they are. And I would look at it more from a banking perspective. Are banks going to do better in a higher interest rate environment? Yes. Are they going to do better with less regulation? Yes. Then buy banks. And that includes Wells Fargo. All right. Thanks a lot, Lee. I sure appreciate it. I'll tell you what, Richard, I'm going to have you hang on. I know you're on the line here. Let's have you hang on here for Fox News, if you would. And we'll grab you on the other side, so we've got plenty of time to visit with you. Our number here is 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. Dave Petso on Idaho's talk station, 580-KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Our phone number is 580-KIDO. 580-5436 is our number. If you prefer email, once again, it's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. Let's go to the phones. And, Richard, thank you for holding. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I have a question about Exxon. We have a trust that is 75% Exxon and 25% cash. Exxon's been paying a good dividend, but we're wanting to diversify. Would it be better at a later time, and where do we go from here?
Yeah, well, now are we talking about a taxable account, or is it in an IRA? How do you have
it?
You really are 75% of your holdings are in one company, Exxon, correct? Did I hear you right?
Correct.
Okay,
yes.
Well, I think that you should diversify now, okay? That's too much. regardless of what company you said, if that was sitting in Apple, which is a tremendous company, as you probably know, and I own a lot of it, but I don't have 75% of my portfolio there, right? It's too much.
Right.
So we do want to bring that down, and there is a very good reason why. One, they are not earning their dividend now. They're borrowing to pay their dividend. So the day of raising dividends consistently every year, to me, it looks pretty clear that's not going to be happening for a while, at least. And they may, in fact, need to cut at some point in time. I'm not predicting that they will anytime soon, but you don't want to watch your income go down and then you decide later, now I want to sell, because that's going to cause the stock to crater by itself. So I think it's a good time to diversify, number one, because you need to. You have too much there, and, you know, I just don't see it crawling back to its highs under the current circumstances. So I think it makes good sense to diversify, but is it taxable if you sell?
So where do we go to diversify to get similar returns?
Well, anytime you have any single stock holding, Richard, it's going to be vastly better or vastly worse than anything diversified, right? I mean, given that you're going to moderate any of your returns by holding a whole basket of them. But if we simply think of it as one of many global dividend-paying stocks, the world is full of stocks and companies that you can diversify in very low-cost, well-managed funds that give you exposure globally to dividends. And I think that's what you're looking for. I assume that's what you're looking for.
Correct.
Okay. Then the answer is I think we need to figure out what you're going to be doing for tax-wise. Is this in an IRA or is it in a
It's in a family trust.
In a family trust. So you're going to have a capital gains issue with Exxon, correct?
I don't remember what the base is. It's been there a long time.
Yeah. So I think it's going to have to be worked off is the way to think of it. You are going to be facing a capital gains problem. I assume it got a stepped-up basis upon somebody's death who put it in the trust. But if it's been there a long time, it's going to have a very low basis. And I just think it's prudent. It certainly, if you are a trustee and other people are there and Exxon craters for whatever reason, I'm not saying you're going to be liable, but the answer really is it's not prudent to have 75% of a portfolio in one position.
Right. And that's
so
what we're looking
at. So I think it makes sense, even though you have to pay some tax, to begin to move it. And if it's a circumstance where you have a lot of tax, then it certainly needs to be considered over a long period of time. How are we going to unwind this position? How does it make sense to do it and pay the taxes? So you are going to have to take a tax hit, I believe, but I don't know how else you're going to get a more reasonable position and diversify.
Okay.
Yeah. I think you have a number of choices out there, and all are good. I mean, there are just so many good choices out there, and Exxon's been a great holding for your family. There's nothing wrong with moving on and beginning to diminish that. And as most investors will tell you, having more than 5% of your portfolio in any one company is getting high, and you should never have more than 10%. You're quite in excess of that. So it's been fine, but maybe it's time to get that ratcheted down. Okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. Appreciate your call. Thanks
a lot.
And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Let's go to Keith in Boise. Keith, are you still with us?
Yes, Mr. Pets. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I sure can. Thank you. Thanks for holding.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, I'd like your professional critique, if you don't mind. I'll tell you my strategy, and it'd be great to hear your opinion, sir. My background, I've lived in Boise for forever, and I've listened to your show and never have called in, but I love what you do, okay?
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Thanks for listening, and thanks for the comment.
You got you and Kevin Miller are just awesome guys. But anyhow, I'm retired military, retired Air Force, and I have a modest pension that I live on. Before I retired, I made sure to pay off all debt. I own my house and my vehicles, and the only thing I pay are utilities. So my investment, what I did is I was able to invest in the TSP fund my last couple of years in the service, and I'm 100% invested in the C fund of the TSP, mm-hmm. The TSPC fund, and the valuation right now is around $125,000, and I'm 51 years old.
Okay.
This is my only retirement investment besides my military pension, and I can comfortably live on my pension. I don't need any more money because, again, I don't have any debt. But my strategy is to just let my C fund ride for the next 20 years of my life up to age 70.
Right.
Because I'm not strapped for cash. Do you think that's risky in some way, or is it a decent idea, or how do you think about that?
No, it's a great question. No, I don't have. I don't think it's risky because you're not pulling income from it. So let's kind of from the first hour, if you will, talking about indexing. That's what that is. The C fund is an index of the S&P 500. So,
yes.
I would probably tell you to diversify that just a little bit. Get some of the S fund in there, and maybe some I. But I don't. Never mind. Let's just maybe do an IRA rollover and do some international outside of that, just for diversification. But it diversifying internationally in an index has really never made sense. So I wouldn't want you to do that within that fund. So you can stay with the C and just say I'm happy and this is okay. If you're not pulling income from it, the index is okay. I think you can probably do a little bit better, certainly risk adjusted, by diversifying a little bit more into some small companies and things like that. But again, outside of an index, especially when you're talking about small companies. But what you've done is just fine, and being all in the C fund is smart for what you have available in the TSP. So that is, in my opinion, the best TSP fund that is available. And if you're just not, and if you're not pulling income from it, I don't see it as risky at all. If you just want to stay with what you've got, I think you could probably do, like I said, a little bit better by, focusing on dividend payers and being a little bit more internationally diversified. But I think you're doing great, honestly. I just don't have any particular problem with it at all.
Thank you for that, sir. Can I ask you one more question about that?
You got it.
Okay. So when I start pulling money out, I plan on you have the option of taking money out when you're 59 and a half. I plan on waiting until I'm 70.
Mm-hmm.
But when I begin taking money out, they offer either an annuity or you can be your own boss, basically, and you can tell the TSP how much you want to take out on your own, and meaning you don't buy an annuity. You have full play or rights to take. So I plan on taking about $10K per year when I'm 70 and just use that money until I'm an ancient man. And not,
mm-hmm.
I've always heard annuities are basically a bad deal. Is that true?
Now, yes and no. I don't think they're a good deal right now. And there are some that are structured quite, I think quite fairly, meaning you really do have a chance to do well in the market. But that's not what you're talking about. You're talking about converting it, or what's called an immediate annuity. And you're saying, here's my chunk of money. Let's call it in 10 years or whatever. Let's call that, or 20 years. Let's just say it's worth $400,000. Probably will be, okay?
Okay.
So it's worth $400,000. You take that $400,000 and you throw it in there, and then you're going to buy an income for life at that point. That's what an annuity typically does. In today's world, today's interest rates, I don't think it makes sense, because what you're really doing then is you're tying up your money for the rest of your life at the lowest interest rates of your life. Nothing I've said to me makes any sense. So if rates are much higher and it's something that fits your objective, then maybe it's possible. I don't want to make a broad statement that all annuities in all circumstances are horrible. I do think that the vast majority of annuities are very oversold because they're high commissions. In most cases, they're very high commissions. There are some out there now that are very low commission, and that's a better deal for the customer. But at the same time, it's a very oversold. I think there are circumstances that are necessary for them, and they can work, but that is a very, very minor amount. So I don't want to say all are bad, but most all are bad. So I think, generally speaking, be very cautious of that, and I would not recommend at this time you even think about annuitizing that money.
You got it, sir. And I do have one more question. Do you have time for one more, or should I go?
We have time for one more if it's a quick one. You got it.
Really quick. They always told us when we were in the service that the TSP has amazingly low maintenance funds. That's why the TSP is advantageous. Do you think that's true?
Yes, it is true. Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
It is very true. They aren't doing anything except it's an index. So it's not going to be defensive in nature. It's not, meaning when markets go down, it fully participates in the downside. It's not defensive in nature. It's very aggressive. That's okay when you're buying and holding for a long period of time. It's okay. All it is an index. I mean, I can get one, too. You know, out there, the Spider, SPY, trades every day as an ETF. It's the same exact thing, okay? So it is very low management fees. But as I said in the first, or at top of this hour, it's not just cost. We also want to make sure it's good management. And this is fine, as I said. I think that there are ways to do a little bit better and be more diversified, but this is a very good low-cost solution. You've done very well, and I'm not going to beat up what you've done or tell you you're in jeopardy of anything. You can keep doing what you're doing.
Man, that's wonderful advice. Once again, God bless you, and thanks for all you do for this community, okay?
God bless you, and thanks for your service. Thank you.
Okay, sir. Take care.
Take care. And our number is 580-5436. 580-KIDO. We have got to take a quick break here, and when we come back, we're going to grab some more phone calls and hopefully yours. 580-KIDO.
This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo on Idaho's talk station, 580-KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. Hey, if you have any comments or questions during the week, just shoot those over to petsofinancial.com. We also have podcasts over there, as well as articles and calculators to help you with your own planning. All right, let's go to Jim. Jim, are you there? Are you still hanging with us?
How's it going, Dave?
Good. How are you doing on this
Fine.
Wonderful Easter weekend?
Yeah, it's beautiful. I presume you're in Seattle.
Absolutely.
Well, how's the weather there?
It's the same. It's okay and ever changing, right?
It's rather beautiful here.
Yeah.
Anyway, I got a question. Okay, you said that Exxon was having to borrow to pay dividends. What did you mean?
They're borrowing. They've been borrowing. Same with Chevron. Borrowing in order to pay their dividends right now.
And
they don't have enough cash flow from that to support their ongoing drilling and programs, of course, exploration, as well as paying out the dividends. So they have been borrowing to subsidize that.
Now, I don't see that as good at all.
I don't either. No, I don't either.
Okay, now, I call it shenanigans. In the past, I've gotten to what they called a dividend, but it was actually a return of capital. Is that what they're doing?
Well, that's a very good point. The answer is right now, yes. Could they shut down a lot of their exploration and things like that and just run on cash flow? Absolutely. And so the idea of having debt to when prices go down for energy or whatever commodity you're selling, then to temporarily be able to go ahead and borrow basically against future cash flow is not a big deal.
But the question is,
as far as growth, would I think that Exxon would energy prices are going back over $100 a barrel?
I don't see that happening.
I'm not trying to predict oil, but I don't see why it would when we are so energy rich in this country. And frankly, we are now moving into a position where we are becoming the OPEC, if you will. We are the marginal producer in the world, and when prices go up, we just go out and drill more. And these companies are profitable.
Now, the thing is, if a corporation can't afford to pay a dividend, they shouldn't pay a dividend.
Oh, I agree, but it's not something that any shareholders. I mean, I'm saying short term, it's not a problem. Long term, it absolutely is, and you're totally right. It's a return of capital when you're simply borrowing to do it. So I don't think short term it's bad because companies just try to make it. When they pay a dividend, they don't want to change it year to year based on profitability. They want it steady. They want it consistently growing over the years.
That's
and when you have a short term setback of oil prices dropping from over 100 down to 30, then they quickly became unprofitable, and the cash flow was a problem. Instead of cutting dividends, they've got plenty of ability to borrow at cheap rates, so they did.
But the question going forward is how are they going to raise their dividend? That's why they should be conservative and build up retained earnings.
Correct, and they have been. They were not paying out all of their dividends, but a big difference in price short term. So, no, I agree. I don't think that they're going to be able to sustain it, and that is a long-term problem for them. You bet.
Well, I do not like that idea. So,
yep.
Anyway, take care.
All right, thank
Bye-bye.
You. Happy Easter.
You too. Thanks.
Thank you. All right, we are just about out of time, folks, and I do appreciate the phone callers today very much, as always. And, Lee, thank you for the email as well. If you have any comments and questions, as I said before, please shoot those over to petzofinancial.com. And, again, articles, calculators, as well as podcasts are available there. I hope everybody has a wonderful and safe, a blessed Easter. Go make it a great weekend.